is going to take Senate File 2032.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a very simple bill, which I think probably would surprise some people to know that we actually need to insert this language to clarify the issue. I was speaking earlier with counsel, and apparently without this language, the the last four digits of Social Security numbers have been treated as public information, potentially, and they're it's not that difficult for someone who's really trying to be able to put together the rest of the Social Security number. And so to make sure that we are protecting the public and that this isn't going to be happening in the future to the extent that it could happen, at least, that's the purpose of this bill. And I'll turn it over for further explanation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the legal advisor for the Office of the Secretary of State and also the Data Practices Officer for the Secretary of State. And the reason for this bill, you have before you in the packets a voter registration application. Since January of 2004, the federal government has required that every applicant to register to vote include either their Minnesota driver's license number or Minnesota ID card number if they have one, or if they do not, they have to list the last four digits of their Social Security number. Now, some people don't have either and they get to write in none. But for those people who just have a Social Security number, they write it onto the card. Also, in your packets, you have copies of sections 13.607, which talks about the fact that elections list data, subdivision 6 of that section, is covered by 201.091 of the statutes, and then you also have a copy of 201.091 of the statutes. But, of course, as in everything else with Minnesota data, it's public unless you say it's private. And the registered voter lists are the only thing that are covered in election law, which implies, as Senator Olson said, that everything else is public. And even then, the public information lists are public, but for a limited nature. Anyway, the bottom line is, in looking over some of our elections proposed legislation earlier this year, Katie Engler from the Information Policy Analysis Division kindly pointed out that it's very easy to figure out somebody's Social Security number once you have the last four digits, because the first three digits are based on where you were born. Most numbers around here are a 470, 476, something like that. And then once you've got the first three and the last four, the middle two, you know, you can start counting from 0 to 99. So the language that we have here, Madam Chair and members, simply says on line 1.7 that the Social Security number, whether provided in whole or in part, is going to be private data. Now, I would point out, it was brought to my attention by counsel that there is also language on the next bill in the A1 amendment from 1.22 to 1.27 on this subject, but we would like to see this bill go forward and be rolled into the omnibus bill, I believe. Mm-hmm. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Any discussions? Senator Olson moves that Senate File 2032 be included in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Good, Madam Chair and members. Thank you, Senator.
And now, 596.
Madam Chair, if you recall, the last time we met in data practices, Council laid out this bill for us, and so we won't, you know, repeat that, I'm sure, but we do have some amendments that are largely technical amendments to clean up the language of the bill, and I will allow Council to walk you through those proposed amendments.
Ms. Pontius, we're going to start with the A1.
Are you going to do it?
Senator Olson, do you want to tell us which amendment you want to go with, or do you want to? Because I think that why don't you identify the amendment, and then we'll have Ms. Pontius tell us what the amendment is.
Okay, I think we'll begin first with the A1 amendment, and I think we may first need to delete. I'll move orally to delete on page 1, section 4, lines 1.22. What about this? Just to through 1.27. And basically, this is the language that's, I think, was in the last bill that we just adopted.
Oh, okay. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted.
What did the amendment?
Were we?
I think she wasn't she just moving to take that part out? What did the rest of the amendment do? So.
Oh, I'm sorry. The amendment to the amendment, the deletion is adopted.
Right.
Now on the amendment, on the A1 amendment. So, yes, that motion was just to delete that section.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Now on the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Lori Barkopensky at the Department of Administration, and I'll just walk you through what the remainder of the A1 does. Section 1 is a proposal that our office has suggested that just allows for the most current terminology for an adjudicated mentally incompetent person, which is now incapacitated person, to be used. So it's just updating terminology. Section 3 just allows the most current version of the FERPA, the Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act, to be applicable in Minnesota, and deletes the language that references how FERPA looked in its regulations in 1993.
Sure.
You have struck Section 4.
Senator Limmer.
On Section 3, I had a question. has this U.S. code changed since 1993?
Skrupinski.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, yes, it has.
So at one time, we adopted the U.S. code in this reference based on how it was written in July of 1993. Now we want to remove that reference so it would be whatever the existing U.S. code is today?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, that's correct.
Okay, so the next question would be is how has it changed and how is it going to change tomorrow or the next day or the next day? Now that it's in, if this goes into law, this is a moving target in our statutes. So could you explain how we'd ever get a meaning on this and how would we anticipate changes of the U.S. code?
Ms. Korpinski?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, we certainly don't know how it will change in the future. What was done on the House side was to insert a date of January 1st, 2007, in place of this old date.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, how has the U.S. Code changed then since 1993, and what would we really be approving now?
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to ask Ms. Engler to respond to that question.
Ms. Engler?
Madam Chair, members, Katie Engler from the Department of Administration. Section 3 is specifically about what's called directory information under the federal law, which is the information which is about students that is available to the public. And the change that has been made is to make things like email addresses possible to be designated as public information by school boards. So primarily the change has been to make it possible to designate an email address for a student as directory information if the school board so chooses.
Madam Chair?
Senator Limmer.
If that decision was made, would the owner of that email, would they know what we're doing? Are they cognizant of the fact that that information would be made public when perhaps they were following an earlier reference that under a U.S. code that it was not public?
Ms. Engler?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, directory information, according to the federal law, needs to be designated by each individual school board. They're the ones that determine which items of data about students are public. And then there's also a requirement in the federal regulations that they notify parents and students which items of data are public for that district and give parents and students the opportunity to opt out of having those data be public about the student. And so each school board is required to establish these items of public data and then, as I said, give notice so people are in, have the opportunity to say, yes, it's okay for the email to be included in the public data, or either they don't provide the email address or they say, I don't want any data about my child to be made public. So there already are those provisions in place in federal law.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
How would a student be explicitly made aware of their opt-out under the U.S. code definition?
Ms. Engler?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, the federal law requires school districts to notify students and parents what has been designated as directory information and give them the opportunity to opt out. And they have to tell them what the procedure is to do that, and they also have to tell them whether or not there's a deadline for the student to do the opting out. So that's all current requirement in federal law.
Madam Chair, is there a reason why we have to follow this reference under the U.S. code at all? Is this some kind of uniform law thing, or is it a just someone in 1993 decided to make this the reference point? Why do we even make a reference to U.S. code? Why don't we just write our own state law?
Ms. Engler?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, unfortunately, Congress didn't give you a whole lot of latitude in writing state law in this area. The Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which is what this U.S. code is, gives parents very specific rights to have access to data about their children and delineates which sharings or disseminations of those data can occur. And so what we've done in state law, or what you've done in state law in the past, has been to incorporate those federal references to help school districts comply with both federal law and how you've defined where you have that latitude, what state law is underneath that federal law.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to think of how the world has changed since 1993 to 2007. I guess I'm thinking of we have a much more active internet system. We've got TV programs on a weekly basis showing news reporters under the disguise of being a child inviting men off the internet to come and meet them at their home. And then this perpetrator is actually there to take advantage of this supposed young person based on internet addresses. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if there's enough protection in this particular law when we refer to a U.S. code. And maybe that is the U.S. code and how they do things, but don't we have a right as a state to be more protective of our children's email addresses rather than just rely on something that's been done in Congress 14 years ago?
Ms. Engler?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, you certainly could make that determination that you don't, for example, want to have email address be one of the choices that a school board could make. But if I'm remembering the federal regulation correctly, there already is a standard about invasion of privacy that the school board is supposed to use in deciding which items of data about students in their district are going to be public. And I will tell you that different districts make different decisions about what data are public.
Please continue, Ms. Krupinski.
Madam Chair and members, Section 6, starting at 1.9 through 2.2, just updates the classification for data about a varsity coach from non-public, which is the classification of data not about human beings, to private data, which is what it should be. And then the remainder of the amendment does the change that we see in the overall omnibus of the using the shortened version, a government entity, for the longer phrase, just to improve readability. So all of those changes just continue that theme of using a government entity instead of statewide system, blah, 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 and so on, just to improve readability. So that is the entire A1 amendment.
Any further questions for Ms. Kopinski? Senator Olson moves the A1 amendment. Sure. Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, I'm still a little uncomfortable with the reliance on the U.S. code, but I think I would like to follow the example that's been told to us by the House that it at least pinpoints a date and time like they did. I don't know what date they suggested or if that's an appropriate one. Could someone there tell me what that date might be?
Madam Chair, counsel can answer that,
Senator.
I think.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, the date that I think is January 1st of 2007.
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, my concern with doing that would only be that we are then always going to be locking ourselves into having to revisit this issue possibly year by year in order to have state law that complies with federal law when federal law may be may change, and then we'll find ourselves in conflict with existing federal law possibly. So I think that's why this was proposed the way it was initially. I do understand your concern, but we certainly can come back at any point. We wanted to come back and revisit this from year to year or 5 years down the road if there was something about federal law we didn't like. But if we pick a designated date, then we are almost setting ourselves up to be out of compliance or to be behind federal law, unless we revisit it. So that would be my concern, is that we could find ourselves in that kind of a dilemma.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
I'm sympathetic to that. I think no matter how it's written, we're going to come back and visit this. We're going to be around. Maybe not you and I will be around in years to come, but someone will be. And I hope that they at least have the same scrutiny that we offer here. If the U.S. Code would change significantly in this site, we then would have to follow whatever that site had, how it had been changed. And so we're going to be doing it one way or the other. At least we put some reference points as of a date certain of what we actually are deciding on. If we don't put any type of date on, I'm fearful that as a U.S. code changes, we're probably going to have to react in some way anyway, if we even know. And what would trigger us to keep reviewing this? I don't know how that's done. But at least if we have a date certain, we could at least go back to the law books as of that date reference and say, oh, that's what they wanted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Well, maybe counsel can enlighten us on in terms of how things are normally done. But I guess what I'm thinking is that there was probably an original reference to a date here because this is the date that the law was initially enacted. But that normally if we're complying with federal law, we're probably not tying it, I'm guessing, to a specific date. We're usually, just because it seems to me, then your laws would always be out of date. And year by year, you'd always have to go back and change the reference. And we normally, I wouldn't think, would do that. But again, I'd be interested to hear what Senate counsel has or what counsel has to say about that.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I know the dates have changed over the years. In general, when the state cross-references federal laws, it does so as of the time that the state law is enacted. But frequently there is an exception in cases where you're really just trying to comply with a federal law that you need to comply with, basically, which I think is part of the rationale behind eliminating this date here would just be to pick up whatever amendments occur in the future automatically. You could have, the only legal problem I can see with not having or with putting in a particular date would be if the federal law got more restrictive. So let's say you were to put January 1, 2007 in here, and then the federal law said no more email addresses could be designated, then potentially the state law wouldn't be as protective. But otherwise, I think, you know, it's just your judgment call as to whether you want to put the date in or not.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I don't have any strong feelings about this one way or the other. I guess... I really don't have a strong opinion.
Senator Betzel.
I think I'd like to have... I mean, the bills are going to go to conference. I'd like to have a different position from what the other body is, I think, just so maybe it can be fleshed out in discussions to reach a resolution. So I don't know that I'd want to have the exact same language as the other body may have. I mean, I'd like to go in with something different, just see how it shakes out. So.
Senator Lumber.
I'm weighing in one way or the other. I just like a different position so we can discuss it further.
I think that's a good point that Senator Betzel brought up. I would propose a date of, May 22nd, 2007.
Madam Chair, I guess, you know, based on what Senator Betzel is saying, I would propose that we leave it as it stands in the amendment, because that will then allow us, Senator Limmer, there'll be a difference, or is that what you're suggesting, Senator Betzel?
Senator Limmer, I think that you'll be part of the discussion. And
if you vote for the bill this time.
And on where things are at, and I think you can babysit this one.
Madam Chair, the last time I voted against a omnibus data practices bill, I still got put on the conference committee.
Hard.
Well, you know, Senator Limmer, it becomes a 5-member conference committee, and there's only 4 of us sitting around this table.
Oh, no.
It becomes a 3-member conference committee. There's only 4 of us around this table, so
we have to go find a volunteer.
I think you're in pretty good shape in asserting your position when we get there.
I withdraw.
Thank you, Senator Limmer.
Senator Olson moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 596. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, then there's an amendment that I think you have, the A5 amendment, and I just want to point out that I really am not intending to offer this amendment unless any of the other committee members have any strong feelings about this. This is an amendment that deals with maybe a conflict of or a question between the Attorney General's office and the commissioner.
Senator Olson, let me ask you this. Some of these amendments, I believe, and maybe you can give us the big picture on the amendments.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that some of these amendments are bills that have been heard and have passed the full Judiciary Committee, which contains smaller data practices provisions, that we are going to be amending those data practices provisions to the Omnibus Data Practices Bill, correct? And my understanding is that some of these amendments, though, have not had a hearing or in at least in the larger Judiciary Committee, and they're not a standalone bill in front of the Data Practices Subcommittee.
That's correct, Madam Chair, and that's why, unless the members feel strongly about it, I really don't have a desire to attach them as amendments to the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair, we're talking about the A5 amendment?
Well, the A5 amendment is an example of an amendment that could have been presented as a standalone bill and might have some policy considerations that you don't think so?
I don't. Madam Chair, I don't know where it came from, so I don't. I mean, it might have been a standalone bill, but it's sitting here before me as an amendment. I don't know where it came from or what the genesis is.
My inclination, Senator Olson, is that if it's supposed to be a standalone bill, it should have come to this committee as a standalone bill, so it could be considered. And then we would offer it to the larger omnibus data practices bill. And if it's going to come as an amendment, the rationale is that there's a data practice provision that has been looked at that we just need to include it into that larger omnibus data practices bill. So, you know, I will take, I mean, I think it's a committee decision, but that's my concern. Senator Lemmer, any thoughts?
No, not right now.
Well, Madam Chair, I look through the A5 amendment. I think I understand it, but I do prefer to see things done as bills so that there's, you know, people can see them on introduction, they can get referred, we can have the discussion, bring in members of the public. The idea that, you know, we may have all of a sudden amendments that may relate to data practice suddenly being offered, you know, here that, you know, have not been introduced, have not had any forum, concerns me. And I don't, you know, this may be okay, but I don't want to start going down that road.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
I'm certainly one who protects the right to offer amendments, as you know. And so I can't be too harsh
in
this area of discussion. But that behooves the person that's offering an amendment to be very prepared on how to present it to make sure that, I guess the burden of proof is on those who are proposing it to make absolutely sure that it's either seen as somewhat harmless or whatever public policy effect that it may have, you know, can be sold at that moment. And if there's any doubt, then that's the risk of bringing in amendments, that you may lose it based on a missed opportunity to educate those making the decision. So tread carefully is my advice.
Is this from the department?
Madam Chair and members, yes. The A5 is our suggestion, and it is almost technical, and just that it clarifies that the Attorney General opinions that trump the Commissioner of Administration opinions need to be those that are numbered and published. The Attorney General's office at times has a practice where they are issuing written opinions to entities that no one else is aware of. So that just to make it clear that to have an opinion that's going to trump one that is the Commissioner of Administration, that we need to have one that is out there, it's numbered, it's published, people can find it and know about it. So it's meant to be a clarification. And then also the second part is to clarify also that the written opinions of the Commissioner of Administration are also those ones that are written and published and authorized under 13.072. So it's meant to be relatively innocuous, but certainly if the committee does not want to take this up, it was not introduced as a standalone bill. We had delays in having that happen. So,
okay. Well,
Madam Chair, I personally am okay with it. I lived through the process of getting this commissioner's opinions process, and what Ms. Barbara Kropensky just described is consistent, you know, with at least what would have been my understanding of the process here. I'm okay with it personally.
Senator Lemmer, the protector of amendments.
Protector of the freedom to make amendments. Yeah. Not all amendments deserve to be protected.
That was a taint on Your Honor. You're right. I stand corrected, Senator Lemmer.
After the explanation, I understand what it's doing. I think it's okay.
Well, I'll offer this amendment then, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Olson offers the A5 amendment. Any further discussions on this amendment? Anybody in the audience want to testify on this amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails.
There's an amendment, the A2 amendment. And again, I guess I'm not going to... I have maybe stronger feelings about not offering this amendment in terms of it having, I think, more significant policy issues potentially. But again, I'll just call this one to your attention in case any of the members have a stronger feeling about this. Basically, this is expanding the protection given to the governor's office to other constitutional offices in terms of the classification of data. And maybe I'll ask Ms. Pontius to, or if you would like to elaborate further.
I know, well, it's a pretty short amendment. Senator Betzel, having the historical knowledge in this committee, why weren't other constitutional offices included in?
Madam Chair, as I recall, I believe it was Governor Carlson who wanted the opportunity to make his budget proposals, but not have, while it was a work in progress, not release everything as public data. And if anybody's out in the audience wants to correct my memory, they please do so. And actually, I remember going along with that thinking, well, the governor ought to be able to have give and take within his own administration, with his offices, to be able to put together his budget proposals. Once the budget proposals are made, then the data is public. I mean, it would be there. And I supported it, and it passed. And I remember about a year or two later, and this would have been about 1996, I think, it was the Attorney General's office that came in and wanted something similar because they were preparing budgetary things and they want to be added there too. And it was done and it was put in the bill, and Governor Carlson vetoed the bill, the whole data practices bill, over that one provision. And we wound up having a special session that year, whatever year it was, and not on the data practices bill, but on some other issues. And I was able to resurrect the data practices bill without that particular provision. So I've seen this before, and I think we need to tread kind of carefully. I don't know what the current governor's view on this was. I just know that I bought a veto, you know, trying to expand it.
And Madam Chair, it seems to me that because this does have significant policy, perhaps issues, and maybe members of the public that would be concerned about this, that I don't, that's why, again, unless another member felt strongly, I wanted to bring it to your attention, but I would not be in favor of adding this as an amendment.
Well, I mean, you're offering this. My question goes beyond, I mean, that's the sort of the historical piece, but beyond the governor vetoing it because he doesn't want, I mean, he wants that power. I mean, I think let's take the opportunity to just think through a little bit why the other constitutional officers would want that same kind of protection that the governor's office has. And if something is good enough for the governor's office, why wouldn't it be good enough for the other constitutional offices, outside of sort of the other trappings that come with that discussion?
Well, there's certainly, Madam Chair, that point to be made. I guess my thinking on this was just that whenever we're limiting public access to government data without a really overwhelmingly good reason why, someone is here explaining why that's really essential, that I'm not normally in favor of doing that, and without notice to those who might want to come and speak against this. And I know that if we were going to consider this, Mr. Neumeister was planning to speak.
Senator Limmer,
I guess that would be the reason.
Do you think Governor Pawlenty would veto the entire
He's been thinking a lot about vetoes lately.
Yeah, so he just might get on a roll.
We don't know that. Do you know that? I don't know that.
I've heard things.
Newspapers.
You know, I'm an optimistic person.
Listen to the radio.
I'm an optimistic person.
I'm a realist.
I'm an optimistic person. I'm an optimistic person. Well, Senator Olson, it's your call. So.
Okay. Well, again, then I'm just going to lay this over to perhaps be resurrected next session as a separate bill when we can have more discussion about
your
it.
Your call.
And unless Ms. Pont...
The other data practices bills that...
There's a couple.
Let's take the A7.
Yeah.
This is a tax one.
Right.
This is the tax one. This was a a Bach bill that came to the full Judiciary Committee with a couple of other that was just the data practices provision. And what we did is we took testimony on this and then re-referred it back to the Tax Committee. And it has been rolled up in the omnibus tax bill. But because we're putting together an omnibus database, data practices bill, we took just the data practices provision of that bill and brought it to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for reminding me about this amendment. Yes, this is an amendment that I would want to include.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, when I used to carry the tax bills, both the policy and the technical corrections bill, and we used to break off pieces like this, Senator Betzel, and send it to you, the data practice provision. So is there a need for a discussion? Or
I'll move the A7 amendment, Madam Chair.
Any discussions on the A7? A7? Senator Limmer?
Yeah, could the author explain Section 7 located on page 2, line 6?
The
author's
not here.
Right. Well, Senator Bach is not here, but we can have, let's see here.
Is the Department of Deed around that this affects? Are they in the room?
Part? Section?
Section 7, page 2, lines 6 through 16. Affects apparently job Z zones, maybe job opportunity, biotechnical health science industry programs.
You know, Senator Limmer, I thought that the explanation on this was pretty satisfactory when we looked at it. What we can do is we can have the Department of Revenue come talk to you about this specific concern.
From the Department of Revenue as a request?
Yeah. This is the Department of Revenue.
Yes, it is, Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, and it's been considered as our chair has been explaining already in past or adopted in another committee.
I remember, Madam Chair, that I'm on the Tax Committee, and I'm just vaguely trying to remember through the haze of what this was about. I understand the Class 1B Homestead Declaration, and but the Job Z issue came up not only as housekeeping type information, but there was also some significant changes to Job Z in the tax bill, and I'm just trying to remember what that discussion was about.
And Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, this is from the department. Mr. Walzer was here. Rick Walzer was here at the Judiciary Committee that night that Senator Bach presented that, and I'm not recalling right now. But this bill still has to go to the full committee, of course, before it can move out. So we certainly have time to.
Can we include that? And we can maybe perhaps get a response from Revenue for you. And if it's, if you have concerns, we can certainly.
The omnibus. So it's my understanding that the omnibus data practices bill would go to the
full committee. Judiciary Committee.
All right.
Yeah. Hopefully tomorrow night.
All right.
So we'll take a look at it. Senator Olson, you'll keep an eye on this, and we'll put a call to Revenue to perhaps come tomorrow night or talk to Senator Limmer on this piece.
We might want to suggest the Deed, Department of Employment and Economic Development, if they have an opinion on it as well.
Very good. So,
Renew my motion.
Senator Betzel has moved the A7 amendment. Anybody in the audience want to testify on this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The A8 amendment, that's another bill, right? This is from the department. Ms. Krupinski?
Here it is. Madam Chair and members, this is language that you may, that is substantive policy change.
It just extends the traveling data provision, which allows for data of a certain classification to have that same classification when it travels to another government entity. We have not had the ability, when records travel from the judicial branch, to have them be protected in the same way on both sides. So this is language that the judicial branch is supportive of, but clearly is a policy change that you may want to see in a separate bill and act on at some later date.
And this addresses the issue that typically, I mean, if information that is private data in one agency travels to another agency, that it has equally that protection. And we just want to make sure that that applies also to the information either moving from an executive branch agency that's going to the judicial branch or information coming from the judicial branch to executive branch agencies.
Madam Chair and members, so the judicial branch has their own rules of court access, so they are not subject to the Data Practices Act. So what we're really just trying to cover is when government entities get data from the judicial branch, how should it be treated and protected? Because if not, all the data coming over would be public under the presumption.
Senator Betzel?
Yeah, Madam Chair, as you may know, for instance, the judicial branch is trying to be protective of Social Security numbers, you know, and sometimes you have in court files very sensitive documents, like in maybe a divorce file, and there's income information, Social Security numbers, but if another agency gets those records and if they become public, I can see why the justification was that we can't tell, Mr. Barbakrinsky indicated, we can't tell judiciary how to classify the records. We can tell our own agencies how to handle the records as they come from the judicial branch. So I think it makes a certain amount of sense. I do question, I mean, it refers to lines 18 and 19, accessibility, in the hands of the entity and in the hands of the judicial branch. I'm not quite sure that in the hands is how we normally word things. I think we could just strike
possession of.
No, or in possession of or something like that, or just strike that. That might be better, but the hands sounds awkward.
Senator Betzel, I think on line 16, yeah, in the hands is all over, I mean, that section. And so if you're going to strike in the hands here, you got to strike in the hands everywhere.
I'm sorry, I wasn't looking at the current law. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how we ever got let that in.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Olson,
I guess my thinking on this is again that it might be a little bit more complicated or add a layer of complication, because you're going to take records that are handled in one way and you're going to put generic language in place that's going to describe how they're supposed to be handled by another department, but it doesn't necessarily match, or it's not using the same language as they're using to classify their records.
I'm pursuing it, Madam Chair. I didn't realize the current law had it in there. And say, that must have been done at 2 in the morning, but I'll back off.
I think it even predates us.
Yeah, it predates.
It may predate the Betzel regime.
The Miriam regime. The Miriam was on from the start. So.
All right. Senator Limmer, any thoughts on...
The only question is what kind of information would this be that judicial branch would have that would pass on to other agencies?
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, one of the examples that brought this up was that the judicial branch would really like to be able to take advantage of some of the master contracts that the Department of Administration puts out for use by government entities. But they don't want to have all of their data then be public under the presumption once it is sitting at the Department of Administration. So that would be just one example of when they want to be able to take advantage of contracts in different pieces.
So look at those tonight.
So it'd be any and all information that they would hold.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Krupinski, in what context did this come up, and how come it wasn't part of your initial bill?
Madam Chair, members, when we had offered technical changes to form the basis of the omnibus, we tried to take out things that would have really any policy implications of any kind. We were not able to get our proposal introduced. We didn't meet deadlines, so that was one of the reasons. These were pieces that were kind of fell by the wayside that we thought, because there was judicial branch support for it, that it would be something that was appropriate for amendment. But certainly, if you don't feel comfortable in that way, we can certainly do a late introduction and take this up again next year.
Well, I think that the committee members, I mean, my sense is that there's a willingness to take it. I just have to put it on the record as to why this just, you know, wasn't able to
Madam
be done,
Chair, members, so. There's no excuse other than sometimes it takes a long time to get into the process.
All right. On the A8 amendment. No, anybody in the audience want to testify on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Mark Amphenson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I think Senator Limmer's question is more important than it might seem in terms of what data this will apply to. And this may be far more complicated than it appears on the surface. There's all kinds of records that can come from the judiciary to the executive branch. How about an expungement order issued by a trial court? I believe current law is that in the hands of the executive branch agencies, that data remains somewhat public. For example, arrest data. And I'm not sure, and there may be many, many, many other examples that nobody here is aware of. And so I'm not saying I oppose this directly. I'm saying that maybe we should pause a little bit. There doesn't seem to be any urgency. And develop a little better notion of how this is going to affect data transfers between the judiciary and the executive branch. Because it's a pretty sweeping proposal, of course, if you look at it.
Madam Chair, I think as I'm thinking it through, there are more questions coming to mind. As an example, the Data Practices Act, for better or for worse, does go through and try to classify things. The judiciary branch can classify things as they choose to because they're not, the Data Practices Act doesn't apply to them. And so this does give authority to the judicial branch to classify things however they wish and have us, you know, honor that when it leaves the judiciary branch. So perhaps maybe the better course is, if it isn't urgent, maybe just to set it aside and, you know, take a look at it as a separate bill when we have more time to do so.
And Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I guess to follow along with that thinking, I mean, this may be in conflict with other statutes that designate data within government entities in a specific way. And we may want that government data classified the way we've decided we want it classified. Mm-hmm. But now we're sending it over from the court system, and if this supersedes that, or it's going to at least be in conflict with it, it may make it public when we wanted it private or vice versa. So, again, I think this is, as was said, a little more sweeping and something that needs a little more thought and work to think about exactly what we might be referencing and how we want it to line up with government entities.
Kupinski, why don't you all give it a little bit more thought over the interim and we can take a look at it. Senator Olson withdraws the AD amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Ms. Kupinski, maybe we can clear up the in the hands of in the whole area.
In your next technical.
Yeah, in the next technical one. So.
The only amendment left, I think, is the A-10 amendment, Senator Olson. This is another bill that has passed the committee. Ms. Pandias, can you remind the committee which bill this is?
Madam Chair, members, this was Senate File 1119. This was a land management bill of Senator Sachs-Hawkes's, which I think is on general orders right now. And this is just the data part of it that the committee considered and passed already.
Madam Chair, I think this is similar to Senator Bach's bill.
Pass it to me. Senator Limmer, any thoughts? You're right.
I don't think it does. Puts some things in just more modern language, and it appears as though it makes reference to state statute regarding Chapter 13. And it's more stylistic, I think, than anything else. I don't have any problem with it.
Anybody in the audience here to testify on this bill, on this amendment? Seeing none. There's no further discussion in the committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Senator Olson, anything else to add to the what about the bills, Senator Betzel's bill? Do we have to now add that to the your two bills that we heard earlier?
I'm not sure, Madam Chair, what you did already.
The motion was to include it.
That's all. Wait a minute, is that all the others?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think formally I think you moved one but not the other.
Right. The Department, Madam Chair, the Department of Labor and Industry bill, we took some testimony on, laid it over, and they wanted more time to work on and think about it, so they were not ready to move on that this year, so that'll be held in abeyance until next year. The first bill, and I'm trying to remember which one that was, I think we did
move, the BCA bill?
Yeah,
we moved that.
I think we already moved to include that in the omnibus bill. So
and then the driver's license ID card one, that's also been moved to be included in the omnibus bill. So
I think we're ready to move the bill.
Anybody here to testify?
Anybody here who would like to testify on Senate file 596 as amended? Senator Betzel, what would the appropriate motion
be? We'll move it to the Judiciary Committee.
And is there a recommendation?
Yeah, recommend pass to Judiciary.
So, Senator Olson moves that Senate File 596, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Judiciary Committee. Any further discussions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Can I adjourn us, Senator Olson? Adjourn.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.